Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Full Chat, the weekly F1 news and discussion show that just might have snuck up to third place in your favourite F1 podcast standings over the winter. I'm Brad Philpott, and as always, I've done my best to filter through this week's busy news cycle to find the best winter F1 content, and we want you to add your views and join in the discussion in our live YouTube chat. We run a Twitter space during our recording, but we completely neglect the listeners on there, so if you're one of them, search Full Chat F1 on YouTube and get involved in the chatting. Remember, any Super Chat questions get a guaranteed answer, but even if you're a cheapskate and don't pay us any money, we'll probably answer you anyway. Tonight, we dig into the pre-season F1 test and try to make sense of what we saw, giving our confident and soon-to-be-proven-wrong predictions for the first race. We give our initial thoughts on the new season of Drive to Survive on Netflix and why, despite being long-term hardcore F1 fans, we're still hooked. In History with Alex and Brad, we take a look back at the team that made so much progress over one winter that nobody believed their testing times. And as usual, we answer your questions in real time as you send them in. Joining me, as always, a former semi-decent kart racer with a bigger catering budget than the Red Bull F1 team, my co-host and best mate, Alex Van Gien. How's it going, Alex?
I like that one. I wish I had a bigger catering budget. I mean, I'd be twice the size, but I wish I had a bigger catering budget. I am all good, Bradley. How are you?
I'm okay. I had a brief idea to maybe not do a fat-shaming joke about you this week, but I just couldn't think of one, and that one mildly amused me.
You think it would kick my fat ass into gear to actually lose some weight, but I just like food too much.
No, and also you love it. You enjoy it each week. You look forward to it.
You'd be really sad if I all of a sudden got skinny, wouldn't you?
Exactly. And you said you're going to do a super cut of those anyway.
I'm going to do a super cut of those. It'd be funny.
So before we get going, a quick reminder, if you're joining us on the Twitter space, you won't hear the music or the bumpers. So if you want to get involved in the chat, see what we look like and have no weird gaps where there's no sound between the topics, head to YouTube. The link's on my Twitter profile or just search for Full Chat F1. So Alex, you have actually been doing some football this week, haven't you?
Well, I did football last week. I was thinking about this last week. So I still do my football on a Wednesday. And I thought because we played really, really, really well last Wednesday, I thought I'd mention to you that I won the football last week. I scored loads of goals and we actually ended up playing for like nearly 90 minutes because the team after us didn't turn up and we just kept playing. And I felt like death the following day.
So I realised I didn't have the right button to do the Did Alex Win the Football? That was an old feature.
A pre-podcast feature.
And the What Stupid Shit Has Mohammed Ben Sulayem Said This Week feature, we don't have that anymore either.
They're all dying. We're already 8 weeks in.
We're going to have to think of some new ones. I, this week, have been doing a bunch of sim coaching, a lot of kind of online iRacing coaching. That's been quite good fun in various different cars. I've been looking forward to Formula One, and I've been watching loads of testing, actually. I sat and watched basically all of every day of the test, so I'm hoping I'm quite well informed for today's topics. You didn't see very much at all, though, did you?
I did see some of it. I was basically on the Thursday, I was down in the South Coast, and about halfway through my journey, Sky just stopped working on my phone. So I couldn't hear or listen to anything, and I can't get Sky working on my phone ever since then. So I watched bits when I was at home, and I've done lots and lots of catching up. So you will definitely have more insight than I do, so I can learn along with the listeners.
And will you be watching the race this weekend? Because there's a Formula One race coming, if you hadn't heard.
Hell yes. I'll tell you what, not only am I going to be watching the race, my 15-year-old niece, who's all of a sudden got herself really into Formula One through watching Drive to Survive, is going to come and watch the race with me, which will be really, really cool, because it'll be the first time she's done that since she was a tiny, tiny little baby when Vettel was winning everything. And that's why she's a Vettel fan. So she was really sad last year when Vettel left.
Awesome. I am going to lock myself in the living room. I'm going to watch every minute of every session because it's the first one of the year and I'm excited. And I've always been excited about F1. Shall we dig into this week's topics?
Let's go for it.
Let's do it. So as we alluded to, the first topic is testing. I watched lots of it, and I'm going to try and teach you about who's going to win the first race. So you can all win loads of money going down to the bookmakers and placing a bet. No, definitely don't hold me to any of this. As every F1 broadcaster has said over the last week, everything here has a bunch of caveats, and this is just a reasonably educated summary based on what we think and what other people who paid close attention.
No,
think.
Let's give odds.
Sure.
I mean, I don't understand odds.
Let's not do that.
No, but it doesn't matter. Max Verstappen's going to win.
Neither of us are real betting people. Anyway.
No, right, I'm gambling.
Should we just start off with the obvious and get this one crossed off and out the way?
Yeah.
Red Bull are the favourites, aren't they? Red Bull had a pretty flawless test. Nothing went wrong. They just ran fast. They ran reliably. And they seem confident and exactly as you would expect from the team that finished last year with the fastest car.
And their car looks like a work of art. It really is beautiful. As in just the way that car flows. I mean, there's that amazing photo of the Flovis paint going absolutely perfectly underneath the side pod and out the back. And like the paint doesn't spill anywhere. It's like absolutely perfect. It's like drew it
on. Is that what you're looking for? Is that what Flovis paint's supposed to do? Is that how
it's supposed to show where the air is passing through? And apparently that's a really good line and a really good thing.
So if it's like splattered, that's bad, is it? That mean turbulence?
Like on the thumbnail for last week.
Yes. So listen to all this amazing technical insight that you get from this podcast. It's really what we're all about. We're essentially an expert tech podcast. No, we're not. We are purely...
we're trying to be. We are hunting for a person to be.
Now, that's probably quite a good little segue. We don't even need to say we're hunting. We are going to have a special tech guest potentially next week. They want to come on next week. So if we can technically get that to happen, we'll have someone that you've probably all heard of, especially if you're on Twitter, on Formula One Twitter, who will come and be our personal tech analysis expert. But let's park that for the moment because that isn't us and we don't know what the hell we're talking about. We saw Red Bull go round the racetrack really fast lots of times.
They set the fastest time. They didn't actually set the fastest time every day because Joe went out on a glory run and set the fastest time on day two. And didn't Bottas do something similar as well?
If the Alphas hadn't done that, then I think, yes, Red Bull would have just been fastest every day. But I'm pretty sure if you can look at it in the cold light of day and look at what tyres people were running and how long the runs were, etc., and what time of day people were running in, because obviously it was really beneficial to be running in the cooler evening times, adjusting for everything you could possibly adjust for and building in a big margin, I still think it looks like Red Bull are clearly the fastest. So that isn't really the interesting thing. The interesting thing that came from testing was who was behind Red Bull. Who out of the two, or now maybe three, fastest teams behind them, who's going to be second best? I'm going to say it's probably Ferrari, because that's what everyone's saying. Is that the kind of thing you've gleaned from reading and listening to F1 stuff in the last few days, Alex?
It very much looks that way. I'd love to be controversial and have a really different opinion on who's going to be second. I mean, there might be some more opinions on when we go further down the grid, but unfortunately it does look like it's a stalemate at the top with Red Bull and Ferrari just trying to nip at their heels as closely as they can.
So last year, I don't think Ferrari looked too crazy fast in testing, but then they came out and won the first race and they were on pole. You know, they were, you know, slightly ahead at the beginning of last season. So is it possible that we just haven't seen what Ferrari have got to give? Have they just held back a little bit?
Well, I did hear that they've been testing the engine modes with Alfa and Haas. So they've been giving Alfa and Haas the beefy engine modes. Maybe hence the reason Zhou went out there and Bottas both went out there and did hot runs. Maybe they're testing the higher engine modes for Ferrari, so Ferrari didn't have to show any of their speed. That would certainly make sense.
Yeah, that's interesting. And Ferrari, we know, were a little bit hamstrung during the second half of the season last year because they couldn't push the engine for reliability fears. So if they do have that kind of fixed, maybe we'll see a step back to where they started off last season at. Because I don't think the car itself, although it's a very different fundamental concept to the Red Bull, I don't think the car itself was slow at all. I think the car was generally really fast. I think probably a lot of the speed issues they had towards the end of the year were the fact that the engine had to be turned down. So whether or not the Red Bull concept is the be-all and end-all, or whether other concepts like the Ferrari one can ultimately be just as quick, I guess we've still yet to see. And well, they're only in the second year of this regulation set. You would have thought that there'd be some convergence, and most team, or maybe the majority of teams, are pointing towards the Red Bull shapes. And
you do, isn't it? If you've come up with an idea and someone else has come up with an idea and their idea is far more superior to you, you're going to look down that avenue.
And it doesn't necessarily mean that's the best one ultimately, but if they're leading, that's the one you're probably going to copy, isn't it?
Exactly. And the only ones that haven't copied anybody is Mercedes, because their car looks entirely different to everybody else's. We can't tell from their performance whether it's good, whether it's bad. I mean, I talked last week about what to look for when watching testing, and there was body language to watch. And George and Lewis weren't bouncing on the balls of their heels. They never seemed quite... They seemed very reserved.
So I also don't think anyone seemed particularly downbeat either at Mercedes. It's difficult to read. We told everyone last week to watch testing and read the body language, and I found it quite difficult to read. The people's body language...
Because you're a robot.
Well, okay, maybe that. I'm not entirely emotionless. The body language you could definitely read as positive was coming out of Aston Martin, and the reason was they think they're really fast. Now, I'm going to claim that we got a scoop on that, because if you check back to our previous episode's titles, we were talking about how good Aston Martin are going to be this year, and it looks like they've at least got off to a good start. Now, the majority of Formula One journalism publications and individuals who contribute to those publications, the majority of them have put Aston Martin as third place in their rankings, and they've bumped Mercedes back one. I'm dubious, because I just feel like Mercedes haven't shown everything they've got.
Toto has said they aren't. Toto actually came out and said, we are hiding.
And I think probably a lot of teams, and we're going to get onto some others in a moment, a lot of teams, maybe all the teams, are hiding things. It's just about how much, what percentage of the pace are they hiding. With the Mercedes, we know for a fact that they had a rear wing on, which they're almost certainly not going to run.
It was like a barn door, that thing, wasn't it?
And they had very low top speed. So straight away, that's quite a glaringly obvious difference that we're probably going to see on that car at the first race.
So you say very low top speed. And yes, in the speed traps, it was around the 315 kilometers an hour, which is matching their top speed from the race last year. So if they're doing that with a proverbial barn door on the back of the car, maybe there is a lot more pace in that car to come. But they've also talked about a big upgrade package that is coming. And the thing is the time scale is a bit undisclosed. I've heard as early as the first race, I've heard three races time, and I've heard six races time. I hope it's the former rather than the latter, but because I want to see Merck back fighting at the top, not just in this weird battle where they're just behind the Ferraris, but not close enough to attack, but too far ahead of everybody else. So basically, George and Lewis have boring races.
Yeah, I don't think any of us want to see Mercedes in the position that they were in last year. Even if you're not really a fan, I think you'd rather...
Not a fan and you're very, very bored of Mercedes dominance, you want to see them further back.
Oh, really? Okay, so I think, well, maybe I'm talking more about general neutral people who just want to see...
No one's really
battle.
Neutral. Bullshit. I really call it. I really call it. No, I don't think there is anybody who is neutral. I really don't. But even the I was actually having this conversation with my wife on the other day, which is I even believe the pundits that you see on telly aren't neutral, and you can tell that like when Jenson Button won his first race, James Allen went absolutely mental because he's a Brit, Jenson's a Brit, and he was really happy a Brit won. Murray Walker, you know, had to stop because he had a lump in his throat when Damon Hill won the title. Martin Brundle went crazy when Lewis won in 08. So I don't believe in neutrality in motorsport. I don't think you... I don't get how you watch if you're just neutral because it just gets boring.
Let's talk about something which neither of us are neutral on, and that is the subject of Fernando Alonso, because Aston Martin are obviously the big talking point of this test and kind of the end of the pre-season in general. We've spoken about them a few times. There were positive noises coming out of the Silverstone factory about big downforce numbers and obviously a major car change, plus the fact Alonso is just a headline generator anyway. Aston Martin then put their money where their mouth is, and came out with some fast lap times. And not only that, came out with some really good long runs. And obviously it's much harder to do a glory long run because you've got to put the fuel in the car. The things that they can do are use faster engine modes than other teams using the same engines. If they didn't do a full race distance, they can have a little bit of a lighter car than maybe some other people doing longer runs. But I don't think that's what it looked like was happening with Aston. It looked like there was some genuine pace there that was maybe slightly flattered by running in cooler conditions for their really long run. What impression have you got about Aston from what you've been hearing in the last few days?
It's all just magic Alonso and him being the best because he tells you he is every single opportunity that he gets. I mean, imagine how fast Lance would have been in that car if he hadn't busted both his wrists. I'm really surprised they haven't just said, I'm really sorry, Drogovic is going to be racing, because if you've busted both your wrists, you're out for a long time. But
They have said it's definitely going to be Drogovic, no one else. So if it's not Stroll, it's going to be Drogovic. So we know at least now.
That's good. They're not going to bring in some other standby driver. But yeah.
Well, there was also talk that it might be Vettel, and that was kind of quite an exciting sounding thing.
I don't think he'll be interested.
I think he would get obliterated by Alonso. He would have had no testing in this particular car, and he wasn't particularly on the top of his game when he left anyway last year, was he? So
I think he'd fallen out of love with the sport. But anyway, back to Alonso. Listen, as I keep saying, however much I don't like the guy, he is a fantastic Formula One driver, and he will get the most out of a Formula One car. Whether it was all show, we will wait 7 days till we find out what actually happens. Actually, less than 7 days, 6 days, 5 days. It's 5 days to the race until we actually find out. But the car looks good. It's got some really cool design concepts on it. Those really, really deep... What do we call them? Water slides. Side pods look amazing.
They do look cool.
And they ran and they ran and they ran and they ran. They had a slight electrical problem on the first day.
Right at the start of day one.
When Drogovic drove out the pits and stopped instantly. I did give a little cheer because I don't want to cheer for them.
Wait. We've got a super chat. And I can't see what it is because I've covered it up with little video that we play. But the super chat is from Josh. Josh asks, think Drogovic might end up doing a better job than Stroll would have. Now, as much as we are not a Lance Stroll fan podcast here, the answer from me is no. I think Stroll would have done a much better job than Drogovic. I think even if you chucked Stroll in without the testing mileage that Drogovic has done, he's still likely to be quicker. Everything I heard was that Drogovic did a very solid, sensible job, but was not on the limit of the car. And you can probably see that if you compare him to the kind of times Alonso did. Although, having said that, he was probably also doing more of the grunt work than Alonso and at worse times of the day. Alex, what's your answer?
unfortunately, however much I do like to crap on Stroll from a height, I do agree. Because he has been given enough time now to become a competent Formula One driver who is very capable now. Listen, he's not going to be the world champion that his dad thinks he's going to be.
Alonso thinks that.
And Alonso thinks that. It's not going to happen. It's just not within the realms of his talent. It's not there unless the car advantage is massive and his teammate is absolute servitude.
So our position has never been that Stroll is bad, is it? It's that Stroll is only as good as he is because he's had an unfair amount of extra privilege. That's basically our show's position.
Oh, listen, he's not. Is that fair? He's not the type of driver that is off there crashing every single week. You know,
no, and he's also not really slow. He's also, you know, he was respectable against Vettel.
He's just fine. Yes. The problem was he wasn't fine when he joined Formula One, but he's now had, I actually have lost track of when he actually joined the
Jerome
sport.
Says this is his seventh season and he's only 24.
Seventh season.
So that's a hell of a lot of experience.
If I had had 7 years in Formula One with all the support and everything put behind me that was possible, I would be good at Formula One. So, you know,
we'd at least like to think that, wouldn't we?
Yeah, I'm gonna go with that at least anyway.
We've got another super chat from Vims25. Vims says you can read it because once again I've covered it up with the video.
Oh, hang on.
Lewis will be on the podium in the first three races and win in Australia. So it's not a question, but we don't mind reading out statements because we don't have to answer them. We can just read it out. That's fine. So thanks, Vims, for that super chat. That's a bold prediction. Obviously, that relies on the Mercedes.
He was on the podium first race last season.
Yes.
I mean, both Red Bulls
with some
died.
Help from Red Bull falling off. Exactly. So for Lewis to be on the podium in the first few races, essentially, we need to see the testing form that we were shown this past weekend kind of flipped a bit. We need to see that Mercedes were really hiding pace and that they aren't exactly where the lap times show. Because if you do look at the hard data, if you look at the long runs, if you dig down and you really compare as fuel adjusted as you can, because you can work out to a certain extent how much fuel people were likely to have been carrying, the kind of compounds of tyres they were running, the kind of time of day they were running. If you dig down through all that stuff, on the face of it, Mercedes are slightly behind Aston Martin. Mm-hmm. I just don't believe that picture. I just don't believe Mercedes are running were pushing as hard and showing as much as Aston, and that's without talking about things like the rear wing and other updates. So I still really firmly believe it's Red Bull and then with Mercedes and Ferrari closely behind in some kind of order, but close enough that on race pace, they can maybe do something about Red Bull. Maybe I'm wrong about that.
I'm going to remain pessimistic, which is opposite...
So you're not disappointed at the weekend.
Which is opposite form to me. I just... After the showing that was last year, and then...
Wait, sorry, I'm interrupting you again because it's Super Chat and we have to interrupt. I'm not pressing the button this time because I want to read it. So Sean Sharlev, in a currency that I actually don't... What on earth is that currency?
Considering I make notes of how of everything, I don't know what currency that is.
What is that? Okay, if anybody listening knows what a squiggly sideways double S as a currency is, let us know. Sean says, if Lance Stroll is out of racing, I do wish him a speedy recovery. Will Lando jump ship and move to Aston Martin mid-season? Oh, that's juicy. That is a brilliant bit of kind of wild speculation. And to answer that, obviously we don't know, but I don't think it would be a bad idea because, as our thumbnail suggests, McLaren are fucked.
properly fucked.
McLaren are screwed.
Lando's not going anywhere. Lando will see out his contract. I'm sure of it. He's probably so... Because McLaren paid for his... Basically put him... Once he got to a decent level, McLaren basically backed him the whole way. Despite the fact that his family's got money and probably could afford it. Anyway, he had the McLaren juggernaut. I think he was a Ron Dennis boy, wasn't he?
I don't know whether it's quite as far back as that, but he was maybe. I don't actually know.
I think he might early days Ron Dennis, and then obviously he moved over, and then Zach.
He must have been very, very young at that time.
Then Zach pushed him over. Lewis was 11.
No, I mean, because Ron Dennis has been gone for a long time and Lando is very, very young now.
Am I now forgetting, actually, how long Ron's been gone?
I think so. I just think you're showing your age. The Vodafone sponsorship only went last year.
Oh, I love those liveries, chrome liveries. I know you hate them, but...
No, I don't mind them. I think Lando moving mid-season is not the wildest thing to ever happen. Anyone who's watched the Drive to Survive series, and we will touch upon it later, we'll see what happened to Piastri and all the behind-the-scenes wranglings. If Lando doesn't want to be there and the team are just doing a really bad job and the car is hopeless, it won't be long before he's seriously looking around. And I would expect that he'd already been, you know, sounding out anyone he could. Going to Aston in place of Stroll.
Exactly. I mean, that's not happening. Lance will be at that team for as long as he wants to be, or his dad can put up with the nepotism, basically. But I think if Lando's going to go anywhere, he will go to Mercedes when Lewis leaves.
Ah, no. Okay, so that's interesting. I would have said for sure that Lando will go to Audi/Sauber when his contract ends. So that's interesting. We'll see.
But the thing is, it's that case of, do you want to go and be alongside your mate at Mercedes, a known quantity who are always going to be in and around it and will get themselves back in a way no matter what they do, or this unknown quantity... And we've seen manufacturers come in before and disappear again. We'll have a
I'm sure he would rather be at Mercedes. I'm sure you're right. Like, if the choice was there, he'd rather be at Mercedes, provided, you know, they don't go into a terrible death spiral over the next couple of years. So if Hamilton's retiring in the next couple of years...
Do you think that's possible?
Yes. What, Hamilton a Mercedes
death spiral?
Well, success is never guaranteed, is it? And, no. You know, top teams rise and fall. Red Bull's period of success over the last decade... And I'm counting the period where they weren't the fastest car, but they were in the hunt and, you know, snatching victories every so often. Even that is like quite a sustained, impressive level of success for any team. Mercedes have been up and around the top for a long time, but now we've got the cost cap and all the resource restrictions, etc. There's no guarantee that you can just because you're really well funded and historically you've been great, that you're going to be anywhere. Look at what's happening to McLaren this year. You know, McLaren are a historically... really well-funded and well-established team, and they have produced a shocker by the looks of it.
I mean, Ultra Bronze in the chat makes a really good point. Merckx lost a lot of top people. You know, and I can't name them all, but they've lost engine people, they've lost aero people.
Yeah. Red Bull powertrains poached quite a few people, didn't they?
Yeah. So, but that's what happened to McLaren as well. You know, they lost all those people. All those people left. I mean, their biggest loss was Adrian Newey. That was a long time ago, but you know, to lose Adrian Newey and then everything went away from them because he went off to Williams for a brief period of time and then went off to Red Bull, and look what he did there until he stopped designing the car a couple of years ago
and built to Jay-Z Lexus, who's always prolific in our chat, says that Lewis will retire and Lando will go to Merckx. He's agreeing with you. See, I've always suspected that it'll be Charles Leclerc on his way to replace Lewis at Mercedes. But this is a little while off.
It all depends if Ferrari continue to emotionally abuse Charles Leclerc or not.
This is kind of maybe slight side topic to our testing program. So, we're not going to go down into detail about all the crap teams at the back. So don't worry. We're only interested in this kind of interesting fight at the front. But let's at least dip our toes into the midfield, or the front of the midfield. So assuming the top four teams are in some order, the ones that we've just suggested, the next team on the list, everyone seems to think, or the majority of people seem to think, is actually the team that was right at the back in terms of the lap times in the test. And that was Alpine, who it seems were doing a really good, deliberate sandbagging job and are quite happy getting on with their own program and aren't keen to show their pace. So why would that be? Why would they have such a different program to everyone else?
Maybe it's because they're working on particular concepts. They have a particular way that they go about their data analysis that doesn't need them to do it at full speed. Maybe it's just been a case. They ran a lot of aero rakes throughout the lots of aero rakes and sensors and stuff. Obviously, they all did, but I particularly remember seeing the Alpine with them on quite a lot. So maybe they're just doing lots and lots of data collection. And then they went in and banged in a few laps as well. So I think it's also, I don't feel like they'll drop all the way back, especially because how far McLaren has dropped back. And I don't really think, apart from maybe Alfa, any of the other cars at the back have jumped forward. So I think maybe they've just been leapfrogged by Aston, and they're basically where they were last season.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, there's no reason to think that they would have just, from the position they were in last season, which was fourth, you know, and a reasonably comfortable fourth position, I guess, by the end, especially if you take into account the reliability issues they had. They're not going to have just forgotten all that and suddenly produced like a super terrible car, like it seems maybe McLaren might have done. They should start off somewhere around, you know, with a good platform from last year. So it would be weird for them to suddenly be just way off the back. And they did seem to just be running around on the hard tyres quite a lot.
Someone in the chat said, did they only run one set of tyres the whole test?
Yeah, Tom asked that. Now, I don't know the answer. I really only ever saw them on the white sidewalled harder compounds. I don't know whether they only use one of those compounds, because they're obviously a few to choose from over the test. But again, that would be pretty weird, because you're not getting much information about how the car responds on the other compounds. But maybe they were just very comfortable doing their own thing. And I mean, I'm very, very interested to see just how much pace they were hiding, because we know they definitely were doing it to some degree.
I got very confused by the way they did tyre compounds during testing.
Sorry, Connor Edwards is correcting me. He says he thinks they were on the mediums. I must have seen them a couple of times on what looked like hard, or maybe it was just their suspension that looked hard.
But to be fair, the way they did the tyres was a joke. Some had stripes, some had letters.
No, that's
different colours.
Right, let me explain it.
As I said, because of my actual testing watching was so disjointed, I just heard Crofty constantly bitching about all the tyre compounds, and even Anthony Davidson getting flustered.
Right, so I'm gonna say this all wrong, but I understand it something like this. So you have little pairings of coloured tyres, and the softer one is the one that has the colour but no stripe, and then the next one up, the next harder one is the one with stripe.
Yeah, it's shit. I'm sorry.
No, you have a C0, which is the... No, that's the other
we've
way
lost
around.
We've lost all our listeners, let me say
C5 is the softest, C0 is the hardest.
Thank you for proving me correct that the tyre system was bullshit.
I thought I understood it, but now I'm realising maybe I didn't.
So what tyres are we going to have for the Grand Prix?
One, two, and three. C1, C2, C3. So we're not having the very hardest ones, and we're not having the two softest.
So the C5 was the softest one, which is where I saw the Mercs doing their quickest laps, but having bad last sectors.
And I think, talking about those stripes you mentioned on the side, I think C5 is when it's red writing and it's got a red stripe.
Yes,
so
this is where it got confusing.
I think that's the way around it is.
That's where it got confusing, and I gave up listening whenever they started talking about tyres. Because I was like, I don't care. Especially because, thank fuck, they aren't sticking with it.
Oh, then what do you mean they're not sticking with it?
Because it's just going back to three.
Oh, of course, for the races.
For the racing, it's just going back
to three
tyres.
We only ever have soft, medium, and hard.
And it'll be white,
and the
yellow,
teams
red.
Know, yeah, exactly. We don't need, as viewers, we don't really need to know whether it's the C1, 2, 3 or whatever. We just need to know which of the three compounds they're on this weekend is the soft one, and which is the hard and which is the medium. So should we just finish off, wrap up our kind of testing analysis?
We've been banging on about it for half an hour.
It's not an analysis. It's just absolute conjecture.
This is where we're going to get horrible reviews that go, these two have no idea what they're fucking talking about, and you're absolutely right.
No, we've got like some idea. I did watch it, like, you know, I sat there and absorbed it. It just means it's difficult to know what is actually happening.
It didn't
there.
Go quite in one ear and out the other, but no. It hung around for a bit.
No, and
we couldn't do this show next week.
No, I would have forgotten everything by then. So behind those teams, we've got. What order are we going to go? It's very, very difficult at this stage. It's very, like, murky. It's hard enough with the guys at the front. Once we get into, like, the ones we weren't actually paying any attention to.
Why don't we just list them?
Way harder.
So you go first.
Okay.
So after Alpine.
Let's go Alfa Romeo.
I agree.
Yeah. Okay. Now you've got to go next for your next one, and I'll agree or disagree.
So I'm going to go Alfa Tauri.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they're one that was very, very difficult to read. I never saw anything special They don't. They probably don't have the strongest driver pairing. One of their drivers isn't that experienced in Formula One. The other one isn't that highly regarded in Formula One. So they might be held back slightly by the drivers and their feedback, potentially, and the cars not necessarily.
I just find it really strange that AlphaTauri don't look more like the Red Bull. Obviously, they're not really allowed to share info, but
I think they've been quite keen over the years to, in order to keep the value in the team for any prospective buyer, that they have, they're self-sufficient. You know, they can run completely separate from the parent team. And obviously there are rules in place to try and make that the case as well. But I'm pretty sure they do share the Red Bull wind tunnel. It's just they have to, and that's actually very near me here, actually, just up the road. But they have to very clearly delineate when each team is using it. There are cameras everywhere. I think it was... Was it Anthony Davidson? Yeah, you would have probably missed this during the test.
No, there's cameras in the wind tunnel.
Yeah, 24/7 cameras that
I had no idea about.
Allows the FIA to monitor when they're being used, who's running it. That's quite encouraging. I just didn't quite believe that they would go to that extent. I'm really glad they do, though. So that was quite cool. There were also, let's just talk about some of the interesting nuggets from the testing coverage whilst I remember, because I didn't put this in the notes.
So I'm trying to remember which teams we've said now and what order. So, while you talk, I'm going to write things down so I remember what we've talked about.
The only ones we're missing so far from the order.
Or is it just McLaren and Williams left?
Williams, McLaren and Haas.
So we haven't spoken about. I think the rest of that's quite easy. So let's do that first, shall we?
Oh, go on then. I'll just forget the other thing I was going to say.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to go with Haas.
Yeah, okay. I would have put them above AlphaTauri, but okay.
I didn't because I forgot about them. Okay. as I think we described in our very first podcast, Haas are the meh team, and I often forget Haas exist.
I also find Alfa Romeo, Sauber, etc. a bit meh. But
I know, but their car's pretty, and Bottas has the best helmet on the whole grid, and he needs to keep it.
Well, he won't have that because we've actually already seen his real helmet, because there was an image shared around on Twitter that people were saying wasn't from this year or it wasn't real. I can't remember what the context was, but Bottas was in it and he was wearing an Alfa Romeo steak sponsored suit. So it definitely was this year, but he had his helmet that he's going to use for the rest of the year. He had his normal blue style finish looking helmet. And that's why people thought it wasn't from this year.
Sad, because that helmet was awesome because it was designed by his girlfriend.
Yes.
Mega. It was really, really cool.
I think she does all of his designs, actually. That's kind of like her side hobby.
Her side hustle.
Yeah.
See, she's like me. I've got my side hustle. My side hustle is designed too.
Yeah, I think she's better.
Probably.
So I'm going to say that... So Haas, I think, above AlphaTauri, but who knows. And I think probably McLaren will be ahead of Williams, even though we've been saying they're right at the back. I mean, second to last is still far enough back, isn't it?
So
I think at least Norris will be ahead of a lot of the other back-of-the-pack cars.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about Piastri. He's a little bit green at the moment, even if ultimately he's got great potential.
Well, we'll talk more about Piastri when we talk about when we have a bit of a chat about Drive to Survive. But I'm confused about Williams. Every time I looked at the screen, they were on track. They had their best testing. I mean, it's not pushing the bar high, but they had their best testing, like, ever. They were always on track. They were always in a decent, relatively decent position on the times. They looked like they were doing really, really well. So maybe they won't be back, but...
Not off the back.
Off the back, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
They'll be in the fight, and maybe Albon will pick up some points. I'm not quite sold on Logan Sargeant yet.
Yeah, I also don't know about Logan Sargeant. He obviously didn't disgrace himself in the testing, but you just, until I've seen what he can do in anger, I'm going to just kind of remain on the fence about Logan. It's different when you've got a driver who's come through and like blitzed the junior series. You can be a bit more confident that they're definitely the real deal. Logan didn't do that, but I've heard various reasons why that might have been the case. And people say, I think he was a world karting champion as well. So
don't you find they always make excuses?
Well,
for people in their junior series when they get to Formula One. I'm pretty sure people made excuses for Latifi.
Only one driver can ultimately win each of the series each year. And there are a multitude of reasons why a driver might not get that win. And the team, you know, just not being in one of the best teams might be part of it. But I don't know. Let's see what happens with Logan Sargeant. I do think Norris, though, will drag a pretty crappy McLaren higher than it should be. And they apparently have an update coming at Baku or from Baku onwards. Because what I've heard on the grapevine, which is just basically other F1 media, is that McLaren realised too late that they'd gone down the wrong development path. They stopped development on that early, but we won't see the other direction they've taken until the update comes. And what that means is what we're seeing now, what we're left with...
is an A-spec car.
Is a car which already was the wrong concept and stopped being developed ages ago when they realised it was the wrong concept. So
that's interesting.
It was like bad anyway, and you know, in comparison to the ideal version of the car. And they realised that long enough ago that it's now just really far behind the other teams that have pressed ahead with their development. So I think that probably explains, or potentially explains, why McLaren are looking quite as bad as they are.
Connor Edwards in the chat says Logan Sargeant is as good as Oscar Piastri.
Okay, and that'll be interesting.
Which would be awesome. I would love to have, you know, from what I haven't really watched either of them drive. I haven't got any real opinion on either of them in a race car. But all I've heard about Oscar Piastri is he's brilliant. So if we've got two young hotshots coming in, along with De Vries, who's also really, really good, it'd be nice to have a really decent consignment of rookies who aren't just pay drivers.
And Connor Edwards says in Formula 3 in 2020, he was level on points with Piastri in the same car for the championship, but got taken out by Zendeli at Mugello lap one. So cool. It's good that we've got people who paid more attention to the junior.
Is Connor just an encyclopedia? He knows everything.
He's good to have, isn't he?
He really is.
So I tell you what, just before we move on to our next topic, my final thoughts on testing. I tweeted this and a couple of the people that I mentioned in the tweet picked it up and either retweeted it or commented on it. So Will Buxton being one of them, I was thinking, why am I suddenly getting a bunch of new followers? Then I realized Will Buxton had quote tweeted
Buxton
it.
Effect.
I basically said, I really enjoyed the coverage. I thought the blend of the F1 TV people and Sky Sports people on this kind of massive long stints of commentary where they had the opportunity to talk about anything and everything during and in between the on-track action. I just loved it. I loved how relaxed the atmosphere was. I learnt new things. I loved the Pat Simmons science lesson. That was brilliant.
Oh, I missed that.
So Pat Simmons...
I watch. I know who Pat Simmons is, but yeah.
He sat down with Crofty and Ant Davidson and basically explained all about hydrocarbons and how Formula One's moving to synthetic fuels and how he'd done the research by just buying a bunch of secondhand books in Oxford. And basically, it was like having a brilliant chemistry teacher who really knew how to engage their students. It was like having them explain a thing to you. And I was listening and watching on my phone at this point, doing some housework. And I actually stopped and unplugged my headphones and played it on speakerphone to my other half, Becca. And
you
she
didn't
even,
give a shit. Really?
She stopped what she was doing and she said, wow, this is actually really interesting. So if that level of engagement can happen because of the relaxed environment of a test session, I thought it was just great.
Even if he does condone making one member of his team crash into a wall so the other member of the team can win the race.
That was a long time ago.
How would you feel about Flavio Briatore doing it?
I don't think he would explain it quite as well.
I bet Flab knows about hydrocarbons.
Are you calling him Flabio? Is that because he's fat?
Flabio.
Right.
Brilliant. I called him Fabio. Fabio Briatore.
Flavio with a V.
A fun fact. My my brother used to do a lot of work at the old Enstone factory when Flavio, whatever his flipping name is, was running the team, and every single shirt he had was embroidered with FB on his shirt, and it was the joke going around the whole factory that everyone just called him fucking bastard.
Okay, excellent. I thought it was gonna be something along those lines. So I tell you what then, let's move on to topic number two, which this week is, we're not going to do a full review, but we're going to talk about Drive to Survive. Okay, so...
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Drive to Survive, it's been around for quite a while now, and it's developed over the years, and it's loved by some, hated by others, but it's undoubtedly brought a massive influx of new fans to Formula One. And I personally have watched every season and began totally skeptically, like pretty much every hardcore F1 fan, where you think, well, this is an over-dramatization, it's not real. I've watched it when it was happening live, so why do I need to see this? But I am fully on board with Drive to Survive, not just because it's made the sport like unbelievably popular to a level that we've never seen before, but because I actually really love the behind-the-scenes stuff that you can take in the right context if you've also watched the season. So I know you've seen half of the episodes of this season so far.
I'm up to the episode where they have just started with Alpine.
Okay, so that is when it starts to get...
Episode 5 or 6, I think.
That's when it starts to get really juicy. I've watched almost every episode, basically in preparation for this show. Normally I'd watch it at my leisure, but I wanted to take advantage of the fact that other people will be watching it around this time. I've got 8 minutes to go in the final episode, so I've nearly seen everything. And the key takeaways for me are, and I'm not going to give any spoilers, but the key takeaways are that I actually think it's less dramatized than before, as long as you aren't talking about the way they splice together certain
incidents.
Yes, obviously the races are not...
It's the fake commentary.
And there is obviously fake commentary,
That drags me out of everything. So I am in agreement with you. As far as watching the racing side of it, because I've seen it and I know the results, I'm not interested. Okay, it's nice to see, you know, in the Silverstone race with Mick Schumacher, it was actually nice to see his progress through the field and how he got on, because we didn't see that because there was so much going on at the front of the race. But it's the juicy stuff behind. It's kind of how toxic Günther Steiner is when it comes to man management, which we have learned over the last 5 seasons. Despite how much I like the guy, because he seems like a really lovely, bubbly person, he should never be allowed to be in charge of man management.
So people will say that... So let's talk about the Günther Steiner thing first of all. So without going into too much detail, because I don't want to spoil it for people, there's an episode about Mick Schumacher in this season, and you see the way that the Haas management are dealing with that situation behind the scenes. And yes, I'm sure, as with all of these things, the edit is done in a way which makes it seem a little bit more intense than it is, but there are certain interactions conversations and situations that were not just spliced together. It's one entire cut. And these people that you're watching are not professional paid actors. So there's only a certain amount of pretending or acting that I think we're witnessing. I think the majority of what you're seeing is genuine things that actually happened, and I don't think they're done specifically for the cameras. And the reason I say that is a lot of the best, juiciest parts of this season's Drive to Survive are done with long-range microphones, where it seems that the person or the people being filmed or captured were not aware that they were being captured at the time. There is a conversation in a later episode with Zach Brown and Otmar Szafnauer, which was them in a closed meeting room in, I believe, either the McLaren or the Alpine motorhome. I can't remember which way around it was. And you hear a conversation from a distance that they're clearly not mic'd up for, and I don't think they thought was going to you know, become public afterwards. So Netflix just obviously have this almost carte blanche allowance to do and record anything they want. So
there was the same thing with a conversation with Gene Haas and Gunter when Gunter was in a room on the phone to Gene.
Yes. You know, and there's lots of phone calls that you hear like that.
It's funny, actually, because Lauren, my wife, she used to be involved in television in her early 20s. She's indulged me in lots of things that go on in telly. So whenever I see new stuff like this, I'm like, oh, how did they do that? I get really sort of interested in the nuance of how they do these sorts of things. And it just shows how amazing technology is and that everybody can hear you.
There were a couple of key moments that I just want to point out before I forget them, and people can discuss them in the comments. Oh, Jerome points out Christian Horner is always playing up to the cameras. 100%. And this isn't just because we're not big fans of Red Bull and Horner. Yes, Christian Horner is very aware there are cameras around him, and he's very, very much playing up to them. There's actually one very interesting segment, which you might have seen by now in what you've seen, Alex, during a team principals meeting where Horner actually accuses Toto of playing up to the Netflix cameras. So it's interesting that the Netflix element has actually become part of the real narrative because everyone knows they're around all the time. So, you know, he was accusing another team principal of saying certain things or saying things in a certain way just because we all know Netflix are there and some things will get picked up. But that was really interesting. The Oscar Piastri saga in general was just fantastic.
I haven't got to that yet, so I'm looking forward to getting into that.
There's effectively an episode and a half about the Oscar Piastri situation. Really interesting to see some McLaren and Alpine conversations behind the scenes that we just wouldn't have known about without that. Obviously, the general Toto Wolff and Christian Horner needle, the way they just clearly hate each other and any opportunity to say or do a thing which pisses the other person off, that opportunity is taken. So this is why I'm saying I like this, because it's much more like a TV drama, except with people where we know these are actually real situations. This is how these people feel about each other.
And well, as you've told me, this is your favourite ever series. Because yes. I thought last series was a bit rubbish. And the problem was they got nerfed by COVID. And Perry Brown in the chat mentions, do they still camp with one particular team? And that was very much a COVID thing because they couldn't move around from team to team.
Yeah, so that's changed.
Now they just go wherever they want. And it is a good show. And especially for new people who want to get into the sport, it's fantastic for that because it gives you an insight. It gives you snippets, but it gives you an insight into everything. It says, oh, actually, do I want to watch this sport? Do you know what? I like this person. I like this person. The racing looks fun. Oh, that looks exciting. Yeah, I'll go and watch. And that's why people are now tuning into Formula One. So whether you like Drive to Survive or not, it has been a key factor in keeping our sport moving and growing like it should be.
So we are fans of Formula One in a way that in a deep enough way and for long enough that means that we have a good amount of insight into people's backstories, where they've come from, what they've done in the past, what incidents have happened to them, everything that's that goes on outside of the race itself. And that's why we enjoy watching the sport as a whole. And if there's a boring race, it doesn't matter that much because it's not just about who wins the race. There are other subplots going on all the time. And what Drive to Survive has done is bring that element of the sport to the surface and put that in front of people who wouldn't have been able to see any of that unless they just sat down and watched Formula One for 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, they're getting to see this stuff that is an element that we have always enjoyed. And they're getting a polished version of that that's made a bit more interesting. And, you know, it's really made into it's produced in a way which makes it very obvious what these backstories are, but it has definitely worked. I encounter people every single day who are Formula One fans now, like people who would class themselves as diehard F1 fans now, watch every race, every practice session because of watching Drive to Survive. So yeah, it has done the job it was there to do.
Danny Henney in the chat, previous guest of this show, says the worst thing about DTS though is it jumps around too much. It should go in chronological order. Now, I don't agree with that because every single episode is a different story on a different team and how they saw their progress through the season.
Danny's wrong about everything, though.
So. This is also true.
I agree with you.
He said that in that scene where they're all in the team principals meeting, he said Horner came across really, really well in that. I think the whole thing just comes across as Horner as a twat, but I don't know whether I definitely
we,
have
we are obviously watching. We're watching it with a preconception that we think that Horner is not the nicest bloke, but. To just answer Danny, effectively, I echo what you just said. It wouldn't work for things. Things have happened earlier than the race you would be on, if that makes sense. You know, You can't cover everything without just literally watching the whole of the real season from start to finish. I think it works quite well. And it's this format that Drive to Survive follows works well in other sports documentary dramas on Netflix that I've seen. Have you seen The Last Dance, the Michael Jordan?
I did a long time ago. I think you made me watch it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that old. It's maybe a couple of years old. That's a similar basketball, Michael Jordan-focused thing that's a bit like Drive to Survive, but obviously it's not covering a current season. There's also a NASCAR version of Drive to Survive that follows Bubba Wallace. Those are two sports that, you know, I know a bit more about NASCAR, but still I'm not up to speed with the current events in NASCAR. And I don't know all the personalities. I found that thoroughly watchable because it's done in the style of Drive to Survive. And that made me understand how a non-F1 person would come and view Drive to Survive and become engaged with it because of the way they cut it and they put it together makes it watchable if you don't know everything about that sport.
Fine. I'm going to try and prove that then, because a lot of my mates have been telling me to go and watch Full Swing.
Yes, that's something on my list.
Which is basically a golf version of Drive to Survive. So if I can end up liking golf because of that, it's not going to happen. They've done a good job.
But yes, that's the one thing.
I hate golf.
I haven't been converted to NASCAR or basketball like some of the fans, the newer fans of F1 have been converted to F1. But that doesn't mean to say it wouldn't happen with a different sport. So maybe golf is the one. Let's both watch that, Alex, and we can do a little segment,
Danny,
that no one cares about that.
Danny turned up a bit late, but he said, "What's our thoughts on Oscar Piastri? I have no idea, but I just don't warm to him." And the only reason I bring that up is because every single interview that I have seen with him, he seems like a really boring person. Considering he's Australian, you know, every Australian we've had in F1 that I can remember has been lively and bubbly and chatty to the cameras. And I just don't find there's much. He doesn't give much. He's very much a McLaren robot.
We'll find out a lot more about Piastri soon, won't we? We're going to see a lot more of him. Tyson, let's not attempt the surname Tyson, says Full Swing is pretty decent. These guys, box-to-box films who make Drive to Survive, know what they're doing. And Tom says, next week, Alex will be telling us all about his new set of golf bats. So there we go.
I once bought a set of golf bats because in my industry, golf is a big thing. In my industry for work, golf is quite a big thing. I bought a really cheap set of golf clubs, went to a driving range to see if I could do it, hit a bunch of balls, and then did my back in and had a bad back for about 8 months. I ain't trying golf again.
And I did it at school for like a kind of weird side sport lesson thing, and I think I was
Posh a school did you go to?
It was like moderately posh. It wasn't super posh. It was like a cheap posh. Oh, before we move on to the next topic, we've got a super chat. New Made. Hang on, let's play the music first. Sorry, Twitter people. I know you can't hear this. So New Made says, I need to make that transparent, that video. Well, at least slightly transparent. New Made says, did I miss you talking about the Merc sandbagging? I'm hoping it's all about that old rear wing. # in full denial. # praying for the bags.
Okay, he loves a hashtag, doesn't he, Newmade?
Newmade, who is a channel member, head to the YouTube channel and become a member for certain perks, like getting a cool little picture of a helmet next to your name, like Newmade has. We have spoken about this. We suspect there is a level of sandbagging going on. We could be on total copium and be completely off track. I just have a feeling that Mercedes must have something that they're holding back.
They have
back
to.
Significant.
I can't go through another season of, oh, look, Hamilton's not winning a race. It was all the car. Fuck off.
It will be good, Danny, if they're back in the fight. It would be good. Yeah, Danny, you Red Bull fan, Maverick Sim Racing in the chat. Right, let's move on to this has been good, Alex. We haven't run out of stuff to talk about. We've got a bunch more stuff that we could talk about. We're actually going to have to skip over because it's time for History with Alex and Brad. This week's History with Alex and Brad is about the team that was bought for a pound that was resurrected from the ashes of Honda when they pulled out, and it looked like Jenson Button and Rubens Barrichello weren't going to have a drive for that season. And we're talking about the 2009 season, and we're talking about Braun GP. Now, this is something I have done absolutely no research on. Normally, for History with Alex and Brad, one of us or all of us really read about the topic. And even if we're not the ones presenting the topic, we have a good read just to make sure we can contribute to something. But I've been so busy today that I haven't researched it at all, but I did follow this season very closely, and I consider myself a relatively knowledgeable F1 fan. So let's see if I can contribute to your segment, Alex.
You say my segment. Basically, we were supposed to have a guest this week. We didn't have a guest this week. There was lots of testing, so we picked an easy topic.
Yes, that's what happened.
Rather than dropping this segment, because we do adore this segment, and it's a cornerstone of this show. But it's okay. I have done some other research for some stats, and I'll try and remember things.
Right, so I'll start off with what I know. So Honda had lost interest in Formula One after a number of seasons of poor performance, things like the Earth Dreams car, and then the car which followed that, which I can't remember what that was, in 2008, which just wasn't very good. And Honda decided to pull out. But they had recently pumped a hell of a lot of development.
Hang on.
Am I getting ahead of it?
The reason they decided to pull out was because of the rather large financial crisis that happened in 2008. Which was part of the reason eventually Toyota ended up pulling out a couple of years. Oh, we have another super chat.
Oh, God, it's Danny
and
Henny,
it's Danny.
Maverick Sim Racing.
We can ignore him because he's a friend, so it doesn't really matter. So we can just ignore it.
Danny Henny says, while I remember, are you going to pay up on your bet? So did Danny make a bet that
Danny
Hamilton...
thinks he made a bet. No one actually agreed or shook hands on it, so
I've got
he
a
can
feeling,
fuck off.
I've got a feeling I agreed to this bet. And this bet was, I think it was £20 that Hamilton would get beaten by Russell last season, and I think Danny won the bet. But
this is why I don't gamble.
Yeah, Danny, next time I see you in person, I'll give you £20 if I've got £20. Anyway, Honda pulled out because of the financial crisis that was happening around the world. But in the background, before they made the decision to pull out, they pumped a lot of money of development into the 2009 car. In fact, they'd stopped developing the 2008 car super early with a view to performing really well in 2009. And they obviously pulled out, and that meant that that car was never going to race. It wasn't going to see the light of day. Honda certainly weren't going to be supplying engines in 2009. And so the staff at Brackley, who had gone through being British American Racing and then had turned into the full factory
Tyrrell
Honda team,
before that.
And Tyrrell before, but they weren't Tyrrell at Brackley. So British American Racing in 1998... and correct me, chat, if I'm wrong on that. 1998, British American Racing bought Tyrrell's entry into Formula One, but didn't actually buy anything else. They didn't buy the factory, they didn't buy the cars, the designs, anything like that. They completely started from scratch in Reynard Park in Brackley, near Silverstone. And they built a factory from the ground up, along with Adrian Reynard and Craig Pollock as manager, etc. Anyway, that's the older part of the news. Turned into Honda. Honda pull out. What the hell's going to happen to the team and the cars that have been designed?
By the way, a quick segue from previous weeks. We've talked about a Tyrrell car, we've talked about BAR, and now we're talking about Honda and Braun. So, you know, we've segmented all the way through the history of the Tyrrell team. That was totally on purpose.
So what happened to the team? How did it end up actually running the following year, in 2009?
So a few years before they actually went, before Honda dropped out, after he left Ferrari, or was made to leave Ferrari, Ross Braun, rather than going to Red Bull, which is what they wanted, actually ended up heading off to Honda to try and go with this manufacturer team and make this manufacturer team a superpower in the sport. And in true Honda fashion, whenever they start to get good, they disappear out of the sport. And then what happened was, Ross Braun decided he wanted to save the team. no part on the fact that he knew they had a really, really good car. And they managed to save all the staff and buy the team for £1.
Because it would have cost Honda a lot of money to pay all the redundancies that would have gone with absolutely, you know, dismantling the team. So it was in their interest to sell it for £1. And obviously it helped them save a lot of face. So that's obviously a good thing for them. But it meant that Ross Brawn got a fully working Formula One team ready to go for £1. Except it wasn't fully working because they didn't have an engine.
No. And they had a choice between the Ferrari engine and the Merc engine. And the Merc is the one that fit the best. They still had to take massive chunks out of the chassis, apparently, to get it to fit. But it was just the best fit. But what they were also developing with Honda was an ERS, was a KERS system. Because this was the year where all the regulations changed. So it was a big regulation change, almost as big as the regulation change we had last year. We went to really long, wide front wings and really skinny, tall rear wings, and all the sort of furniture on top of the cars had all gone, all the winglets and all the little vanes and stuff that used to look ridiculous on the cars and would just fall off anyway. That was all gone. So they had developed KERS as well, which, for those who don't know what KERS is, KERS was the initial introduction of using battery power and regenerative energy inside the Formula One car, where they had a burst of 80 horsepower for 6 seconds every single lap.
Okay, so I'm with you so far. Did Brawn have KERS?
So Honda had the technology, but because they were now putting it in a new engine, in a new chassis, and the packaging was very hard because the batteries were big, very heavy, which meant weight balance, ballasting it around the car was very difficult, they opted to run without it, which actually was for the best, because the two cars who were the best two cars in that season didn't have it, which was them and Red Bull.
Okay, so the car has got a bodged-in Mercedes in the back of it. They missed the first couple of tests. Is that right? Because this was back in the time where you didn't have to all test in the same place. They'd missed a couple, and I know they did do a bit of running on what's known fondly as the Silverstone Triangle, the little infield circuit at Silverstone. With
the National?
No, not the National. The National's
the school
actually
circuit?
Yeah, it's called the Stowe Circuit.
That's the one.
It's the track that you drive if you go to Silverstone to do an experience day, thinking you're going to go out and drive a single-seater on the F1 track. You actually don't. You drive inside Silverstone as a venue, but you're on a completely different track to the racetrack itself. They did some testing there, and it worked. It was fine.
That was the key point.
Jenson Button felt like the car was okay, but you really can't tell a lot from the Stowe circuit. It's far too small and twisty.
So they went to Barcelona, where everybody else had been for 2 days or 3 days beforehand, and they turned up for the last day of the test. Jenson Button went out, did an outlap, did one lap where he wasn't really pushing, came back in, started moaning about the car, and they said, Jenson, you've just gone a second quicker than anybody else has been around here all week. And they promptly went around sandbagging for the rest of the time, because they had a rather big innovation on their car that only two other teams had thought of, which was the double diffuser. Now, Brad, you might be able to explain the double diffuser better than I can.
I'm going to give the most basic possible version. Essentially, a loophole in the regulations that allowed you to interpret the word hole in a certain way when viewed from a certain angle. It allowed them to effectively double the exit capacity of the diffuser at the back by reading the regulations in a way which meant that they could direct air through a certain portion of the floor in a way that other teams hadn't realized.
Now, the interesting thing about that regulation, that loophole that they came up with, was it was actually found by one of the Japanese engineers from Honda, because he was reading these regulations in his second language, and it was just ended up being the way he interpreted it. The two other teams that
I didn't know that. That's really interesting.
I literally learned that before coming on the show. And the two other teams that had the double diffuser was Toyota and Williams. Now, Williams, I can't remember who it was who was in charge of Williams. I think it was Sam Michael,
I believe.
He was like, I can't believe nobody else saw this. Obviously, it was also a year where Ferrari and McLaren had just been obviously embroiled in a massive two-year battle right to the end of the season title fight, and had both absolutely fluffed the regulations. They both had KERS, and I think they both spent a long time trying to package KERS in their cars to get extra speed out, and the cars were just awful, which is obviously terrible for Lewis Hamilton because it was the year after his championship winning year.
And it meant those teams really were not in the fight at all from the outset.
Not until halfway through the season.
Definitely a Brawn versus Red Bull fight. But early on in the season, whilst Red Bull were kind of getting their act together, Brawn were pretty dominant. If I remember correctly, at the very first race, at this point, we still weren't 100% sure what the pace of the Brawn was going to be. You couldn't read into the testing necessarily. People didn't believe it. They turned up, Jenson Button was on pole and effectively drove away to win.
Barrichello was second.
But Barrichello had some major problems and still came back to second. I believe he fluffed the start or something like that.
He fluffed the start, he hit Mark Webber, he broke a bit off his front wing and still came second after Vettel and Williams, I can't remember who was driving it, crashed into each other right towards the end. And that was the second ever race to finish under safety car.
Okay, interesting. I did not know that. So Brawn were running away with the championship. Well, I should say
six of the first seven races Jenson won.
Jenson Button was the one winning. What? Which was the race he didn't win? I don't remember. Was the British Grand Prix one of the first seven races?
No, they'd already started to slip off by the time we got to Silverstone. Okay. I can't remember which one it was. Someone in the chat will tell us. Williams BMW driver was Kubica.
Williams BMW driver. Kubica never drove a Williams when it was a BMW. What's the question? I don't know what question that is answering.
Sorry. Kubica and Vettel had the crash.
Okay.
That brought out the safety car.
Okay, understood. I was like two topics further ahead than where we were talking about.
Vettel won in China.
That's why Button didn't have like the 100% from the first seven races.
Correct. It was still a record. I don't know if it is still a record. I don't follow those things, but it was definitely a record at the time that no one had ever won the first seven in six.
He looked like an absolute shoo-in for the championship, didn't he?
Absolutely.
It was 100% going to Button, and then the Brawn started running out of steam. As the season went on and the development wasn't happening, because obviously this was a car which was really well-developed by Honda in the build-up to the season, but then pretty much from the moment the team was sold, there wasn't any more. There wasn't any budget to develop it through the season. It was the same car that effectively as started the season that was just being used through the rest. And a team like Red Bull, who were definitely on the up and having money spent in the right places and definitely developing, caught them and caught them and caught them and got on top of their car. And there was a point kind of middle or towards the second or the final third of the season where it looked like it had crossed over and Red Bull might actually win this. So then what happened?
So Vettel was catching and catching. The Brawn wasn't moving forward. A new mid-season entrant of Romain Grosjean. I saw a picture of him when he first joined. God, he looked young when he first came in. Had long hair. He took Jensen out at Spa on the first lap, which obviously took a big dent to his championship. And he just seemed to like never get anywhere near the podium. For a really, really long time.
Romain Grosjean took Jensen out.
Romain Grosjean, on the first lap of Spa, took him and Lewis out.
Ah, wow. I did not think this was the same season.
Yeah, it was that season.
Okay, I'm learning lots. And Maverick Sim Racing in the chat has pointed out that that wasn't a record, first six from seven, because Schumacher won the first 10 of 11 races in 2004. But let's say it was a record for Jenson Button.
There's a whole bunch of different videos that says that's the fact, but did he really win 10 from 11? God, that car was OP. Because he's rubbish. No, I'm joking. Looking into that conversation right now, otherwise Daniel will ruin our chat for the rest of the thing. So they went on throughout the season and
Started falling back.
Webber won his first race. He won at the Nürburgring. Vettel was picking up wins. But they just couldn't get anywhere near the podium. So they were losing losing points hand over fist. But the person losing the most points was Rubens Barrichello, because Rubens Barrichello, who had been second for a long time, all of a sudden got overtaken by Sebastian Vettel right towards the end. And it only when we came to Brazil Jenson Button put in one of the best drives of his career after fumbling qualifying. He started 14th and Seb started 16th. Barrichello on pole at Brazil. Still didn't finish the race.
Oh, that's painful.
He never finished a Brazilian Grand Prix.
Oh, wow.
In all his years. I'm pretty certain I'm right on that one. He either didn't finish or never got a point in the Brazilian Grand Prix.
No, surely not.
And he has been in positions to win.
Someone fact check us.
Danny will definitely know this.
Connor Edwards says he finished second. Alex Van Gien's here with the hot, completely incorrect information for every. We're going to teach the new Formula One
Connor,
fans all about the
go
history
away.
By completely making it up.
It's Alex good thing Van we can rewind and skip that.
Thing. Alex Van Gien's false memories. Oh, well. That's going to be the new segment. Anyway, Barrichello wasn't doing as well as Button, and this really was such an opportunity for Barrichello to finally get a championship, having been in Schumacher's shadow for all those years. He finds himself in a car capable of winning the championship. And he didn't. Maverick Sim Racing again in the chat. What kind of stat man is this?
Basically, I can't even blame Sean Kelly for this one.
No, anything Alex says that is like said as a statement of fact about anything that was more than a year or so ago, go and check it.
Yeah,
just Google it. Google it before you fully believe it. Connor Edwards did just Google it. So the Button won the championship by finishing fifth at Brazil. Braun won the Constructors' Championship as well. Is
they
that
did.
Right? Okay, so. It's a team that had, they only existed for 1 year. So the following year, it became Mercedes anyway. So the team had 100% championship record. 1 year, Drivers' Championship, Constructors' Championship, never to be seen ever again. And that is, in my eyes, one of the coolest fairy tale stories that's ever happened in Formula One. And the reason we went with this as a history with Alex and Brad for this week, not only because we both had a bit of background knowledge, well, one of us did, apparently. The other one just makes shit up.
They're now arguing in the chat that actually it was eighth, not second.
Okay, well, anyway, the reason we brought this up is...
I have to go Google this shit.
The reason we brought this story up this week was because of Aston Martin. Because people don't quite believe the pace that the Aston Martin's shown. And if they go and win the first race, and we did allude to this in one of our other episodes, so again, we're going to claim this if it happens. If they are stunningly quick this weekend, there's some kind of parallels there because people didn't believe it. So there we go. That was history with Alex and Brad. I think it's probably time, after an hour and 15 minutes, for us to begin our wrap-up section of the show. So just before we actually sign off, and we didn't do, you know, we said on Twitter, Alex, we wanted people to send in their ways to spice up.
Yeah,
testing.
No one did.
No one sent anything in.
That's because you didn't send it in. You didn't put it up a day and a half ago like I told you to.
Yeah, well, I was busy, so we won't do that segment. But we would like to tell you guys about how you can support the show. We're not asking for money, by the way. We want you to help us by leaving a review, effectively. So you can leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any podcast reviewing site that you happen to use, because this week we dropped to 78th position in the Kenyan sports podcast charts, but we got up to P9 in Barbados, so it's not all bad. But you know, we're taking these
in podcasts
victories.
In general
podcast. You can like the YouTube stream that some of you are watching right now. You can subscribe to this channel. That helps us out as well. We also have a Full Chat YouTube channel, which is populated with every one of our old episodes. And eventually, if and when that gets enough subscribers, that's where we'll move this portion of the show. We won't be on Bradley Philpott YouTube forever, just because I happen to have more followers than the Full Chat one. So it makes sense. But it's just a couple of clicks to do those things. And it really does help us. It'll help YouTube recommend this to more people as well. Obviously, tell your friends if you thought this was enjoyable in any way and wasn't complete rubbish. You can use your word of mouth to help market the show. Do us a favor and do that and pretend that we know what we're talking about. Aside from that, the really easy bits, follow Alex Van Gien on Twitter. Also on TikTok, at Alex Van Gien. Full Chat has its own TikTok where Alex will post clips of things like all the ways I insult him in the intros. So you need to do a compilation of those. There's definitely enough of those now that you can do one of those.
Yeah.
And that's at Full Chat on TikTok. And obviously you can follow me at Bradley Philpott on Twitter. Anything else to add, Alex, before I read out
you
a couple of nice reviews?
You teach people to race to drive all sorts of different types of race cars, real and pretend?
If you want to get taught by me how to drive things faster, then get faster, head to bradphilpott.com /coaching.
And then once Brad has got you really good at sim racing and you want a nice livery for your car, come and talk to me and I'll make them for you.
Alex is good at painting on Photoshop. Or getting, he's the right level of painter for the price he charges. Is that kind of a nice enough way of putting it?
I am self-taught at Photoshop, and I have got much better. And I can make things to a design that you want. I can do anything you want now.
In all seriousness, Alex's liveries are very, very good. So probably better than most people can do themselves. Let's just read a couple of nice reviews we got from last week. We got a review from Ken's Left Toe. Oh, Ken's Left Toe. Right, okay. That's obviously not as well known. This is a nice simple one. 5 stars. Brad and Alex know their stuff and are funny. So that's a nice live from
him. Wait until they hear my stats from this week.
And from Tusk7 via Apple Podcasts, they said, great podcast, 5 stars. Felt the need to correct Michigan's reputation in the reviews. I enjoyed listening to this podcast since it started. And he says some other nice things as well. And that's because we got a horrible review from someone in Michigan last week. So really, Alex, I'm looking forward to the race at the weekend. We're going to have a bunch of stuff to talk about next week. Please, everyone, join us.
Do we want to give a quick prediction on what we think the top three is going to be?
Well, I mean, we kind of did 25 minutes on that, but yeah, let's do a definite prediction.
So as in drivers. So go on. Quali and race.
Leclerc on pole.
Mm-hmm.
Verstappen second. Hamilton third. And that is a terrible prediction because that assumes that the teammates of each of those drivers are going to do massively worse than the number one drivers. But that's my prediction.
I'm going Max, Perez, Leclerc.
I'm going to say in the race, some unreliability is going to be uncovered by the fact that people were sandbagging and not using their engines to the fullest during testing. And so the final result in the race is going to be Hamilton, Alonso, Leclerc. You're laughing, but when that comes true, you're going to look like a legend.
I'm going for a Red Bull 1-2, and I don't like it. And Ferrari will fuck something up, and George will come third. If you notice, I'm staying firmly away from predicting anything for Lewis. I just don't want to do it.
Well,
this is why I don't gamble.
Yeah.
Because if I gamble, I have to, I can't not bet on Lewis because
it's because you're hoping. Because I want the person to win. I don't want to win. I bet the other way because then at least I'm not disappointed with both things. Like
no,
one of
that's
them
not
is
the result
go, right?
I want. So interrupt with my joy for.
I understand. I do understand that perspective. Well, let's see. We're going to find out what happens in just a few days' time. Join us next week when we're going to have a special guest, F1 data analysis, who are going to tell us all about the data from the first race of the season. But until we see you next time, keep it full chat. Goodbye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.